Hello, welcome to today's edition of Health and Food Bloggers Podcast. My name is Blessing and I blog at www.globalfoodbook.com where I share healthy recipes. Today, we would like to discuss celiac disease and gluten-free food. And here with me today are Christina and Christine. Christina, can you introduce yourself and Christine as well?
Yes. Hi, my name is Christina and welcome to our podcast. I blog over at www.poozinesskitchen.com where you'll find Greek recipes and sweets I share from around the world.
Hi, I'm Kirsten Berman and my website is glutenfreegal.com and I write about healthy living, gluten-free, and celiac disease.
Yay, we are so excited to have you on our show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for being on.
So, Christina, do you want to go ahead with the questions?
Yes, I'll start. You know, can you please, Kirsten, tell us a little bit about how you started? I know you blog over at Gluten Gal, and if I said that wrong, please correct me.
It's Gluten Free Gal.
There we go. Okay, glutenfreegal.com. And I know you're in Southern California, so we're on the same time zone. I'm really interested in how you started. How did you start the gluten-free? I'd like to know.
Well, it was kind of an accident, to be honest. I was sick for about 7 years and couldn't figure out why, and stumbled upon gluten-free at the end of December or at the end of 2010 and realized that I had celiac disease. And so I went into 2011 having no idea what that was or what gluten-free was. And it's amazing how in just a few short years, gluten-free went from being not really ever heard by anyone to being on the forefront of everyone's lips at this point. And even just a few short years ago, there was really not anything in stores compared to what it is just 3 years later.
Right.
And so I had to learn everything I possibly could about gluten-free and celiac disease, and I taught myself how to bake, and I started my website to help other people figure out what gluten-free was and what celiac disease is, and to really start educating people and give people a place to go to comment and find recipes and find out about healthy living gluten-free, because I think that's what's really important is people equate gluten-free with healthy, and that's the complete opposite. If you're eating processed food now, you're just going to go to eating processed gluten-free food, which is even worse for you because there's less vitamins, you know, B vitamins and so on that we're getting from wheat, unfortunately. So it's really important to kind of incorporate everything into your diet.
That's very interesting.
Did I answer your question?
Yes. No. Yes, you did.
Okay.
And Blessing, Dia, I think you probably have questions as well.
So, Kirsten, what do you understand by being healthy?
Well, I think that, you know, today the American food system is appalling. And our 80% of the food that's sold in grocery stores today has sugar and high fructose corn syrup, which leaves only 20% of food that is relatively healthy or is healthy.
Which is horrible.
Yeah, and I don't think that gives people options. I think that basically, you know, you're pushing the sugar, you're pushing the high fructose corn syrup instead of pushing the healthy. Because when you go out to every corner store or to Starbucks or to this place, you're finding more things that are unhealthy to eat. And I think that it gives people less options if they're trying to eat healthy, but you know, 9 out of 10 things aren't healthy. It's kind of hard to make that crossover. And when people go gluten-free, because they have to heal their bodies. I think, you know, one of the first things that that's on their mind is, oh no, I can't eat this and I can't eat this and I can't have this. And so what they start doing then is then replacing those bad foods, eating those processed sugary foods that they were eating before. Now they replace them with gluten-free processed foods filled with sugar and high fructose corn syrup. And you're not doing your body any favors because your body's sick and it needs to be healed. And so now you've taken out the gluten, but you're still feeding it all these chemicals and sugars that's just making your body stay sick instead of getting it well.
Right.
Okay. All right. Still on gluten-free food, can you cite examples of gluten-free food?
Sure. Well, you know, gluten is wheat, rye, or barley, basically. A hidden ingredient that people don't think to look at is also malt, which isn't a lot of ingredients. Malt is in salad dressings, it's in potato chips, it's in candy. So that's a hidden gluten ingredient that people need to look for. But gluten-free is healthy living. I mean, fresh vegetables and fruits, that's all gluten-free, which I try to eat as much as possible, and meats and fish and nuts. And then, you know, you have corn, rice, potatoes. Those are gluten-free. Unfortunately, in gluten-free products today, that is the mainstay of the ingredients being used is corn and rice. And that has absolutely no nutritional value to it whatsoever. So you're eating these products that have no nutritional value to them. So you want to look for more gluten-free products. If you are going to eat packaged gluten-free products, you want to look for something that's more ancient grains, that are more healthy, that haven't been as processed as corn and rice, like teff flour or millet or buckwheat or amaranth. Those are, or coconut flour, almond meal, things that are used, things like that, sorghum, that actually are giving you healthy benefits. As you're eating the food, they're giving you vitamins and minerals that rice, that gluten-free food made with rice and corn aren't giving you. And generally, a lot of food that is made with rice and corn is also filled with sugar. So that's something that you want to look for.
Right. And very interesting. I also have a question for you. You know, being gluten-free, you kind of went over a little bit, but for somebody that absolutely has no idea what gluten-free is, is it hard to maintain a gluten-free lifestyle? What entails this lifestyle?
Well, you know, to be honest, gluten-free, celiac disease is probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me. Once I was diagnosed, I never looked back and said, oh my God, this is the stuff that I can't eat. Never even considered it because I was just so happy that I was healthy. For me personally, I get really sick when I eat gluten. I'm one of those people that I eat something and it hits me immediately. My stomach bloats, I get sick, I throw up, I have headaches, I get really tired. For me, I absolutely have to eat a gluten-free diet. One of the problems is that 80% of the people who have celiac disease are asymptomatic, which means they have no symptoms at all. And that's a problem because people then think that they can cheat and because they're not feeling any symptoms. And gluten-free, going gluten-free and living a gluten-free lifestyle is not easy by any means. Like, you know, I wouldn't recommend it to the general population if you don't have to go gluten-free. Because it's pretty much either all or nothing, especially if you need to be gluten-free, because it's still doing damage to you. Even if you don't see it, it's going to catch up to you sooner or later. But you have to read every label. That's what I tell people, number one, is read every label. If you can't read labels, then ask questions. If you don't get the answer that you're looking for, then don't eat it. That's just the rule right there. And it gets tedious. Because you have to read every label, especially when you first go gluten-free. It's confusing. You know, you're depressed. You don't know what you can eat. You go on the internet and there's so much information and it's overwhelming. And then you go out to a social setting and you don't know if you can eat this or eat this. And then, you know, people get embarrassed because they have to ask questions. They have to ask the host or they have to ask their waiter or, and you know, And then on top of that, you're dealing with the gluten-free fad. So you're dealing with people who are ordering gluten-free that don't need to be gluten-free. So now you have a whole whole society of restaurants who aren't taking gluten-free as serious as they should be, because you have somebody who's claiming to be gluten-free go in a restaurant, order a gluten-free meal, and then they have chocolate cake for dessert and leaves the waiters and kitchen like, "Why? I don't understand gluten-free." And so then it takes away from the people who need it, because then they don't take us as serious when we walk into a restaurant and say, ask them questions, and you see their eyes rolling. And, you know, that's hard for a lot of people to have to go through something like that. And so they would rather just cheat or eat something and then deal with it in private than have to, you know, go through that kind of situation in front of their friends or coworkers or family or, you know, whatnot. And, you know, we're talking about your health now. This is your health. And if you've been sick for a long time and now you've gone gluten-free because of your health, it doesn't matter what anybody else says, what anybody else thinks. It doesn't matter, because they don't walk in your shoes. They don't know what it feels like after you eat gluten. They don't know what you're going to go home and do and throw up or pass out, right, or whatnot. And it's nobody's business. This is your road, and you need to take control of your life and figure out how to eat to make you healthy so you don't die in 10 years, or you don't get cancer or diabetes or thyroid or something else that's caused from you not eating properly. And, you know, going on the internet and doing research, finding bloggers or websites that you like, getting on Twitter, which has an amazing gluten-free community for asking questions and recipes and all sorts of information out there. But it's just really important, once you make that decision, is to really follow it through. And everything becomes now a preparation. You know, once you leave the house, you have to prepare to leave the house, because you have to leave with your own food. You always, right. I always have snacks in my car just in case. You have to pack your own lunch to go to work. If you're going to a party, you have to bring your own snacks just in case. Generally I'm the one in the corner eating the vegetable tray, because that's the only thing that I can gluten-free, because I don't even try or test anything. I've learned my lesson. And, you know, the worst thing to do is to then ruin your whole day or your whole night because you were too afraid to ask questions, or because you were starving. And so you were like, I'm just going to eat this now. It's not going to make a difference. So it becomes, being gluten-free is not just about saying, I'm going to start eating gluten-free. It's a whole ordeal. Like, it's a whole lifestyle change. You are changing your life now. And, you know, people have to look at it that way.
It's very interesting to hear this, because honestly, I just started a farmer's market. And so people are asking me, can you do gluten-free pastries? And so it's something that has been on my mind, but I steer away. Honestly, I will tell you this. I steer away from seeing all these crazy ingredients of, let's say, xanthan gum or, you know, whatever it may be. Kirsten, can you tell me how not to steer away from gluten-free recipes? Is there a better way to plan a gluten-free recipe for someone like me?
Well, there's, you know, okay, I'll just go out and say it right now. Gluten-free baking is not easy. Like,
okay.
if you thought gluten-free eating was difficult, gluten-free baking is that times 100. Because, you know, when you're baking with something like wheat, you just add the wheat flour and then an egg and this, and bam, you have perfect bread or perfect cake. When it comes to gluten-free baking, you have to mix ingredients. You know, you have to mix your flours, and you have to add xanthan gum or guar gum for a stabilizer. You have to add some kind of starch. There's a myriad of ingredients that you now have to put together to try to come out with something that actually tastes amazing.
Right.
luckily, we've come a long way. So there's a lot of more recipes to kind of go off of now. And then you can create your own based off of that. But in your kitchen, like, you know, there's just, if you are a baker or you are going to start baking gluten-free, like, flours that you should have in your cabinet is like teff flour, comes in a variety of colors and is really, really high in iron. Millet, coconut flour.
I love coconut flour.
I do too. Buckwheat flour. Buckwheat is amazing, and it's one of my actual favorites. It's high in protein, fiber, vitamins, minerals, and it just bakes up everything beautiful. Bread, pizza crusts, and it just really adds so much to the flavor.
Sorry to interrupt, but I was actually wondering, do you use Bob's Red Mill products at all?
I do once in a while, and I actually met him. He's a very nice person.
Oh, cool.
I try to make my own stuff if I can. But getting an all-purpose flour, Bob's Red Mill is great. Jules, gluten-free, she has some really great flours. Pamela's has some all-purpose gluten-free flours. And that's definitely, you know, the easier way to go, to start with a base like that and then to kind of create around it, because the hard thing is getting the base perfect, is getting that perfect mixture of the gluten-free all-purpose flour.
Right. But I have noticed that in my baking.
Yeah, you know, how much to add of this, how much to add of this, and then, you know, and then keep experimenting. So if you can use something that's already really great and proven great and start off that, wow, does that make your life so much easier?
Yes, I'm sure.
So what sort of information do you look out for on the labels to determine if it is gluten-free or not?
For the labels? Well, if you're reading labels, you really want to look for something that's certified gluten-free, that says that it's been tested, it's been, you know, supported by a celiac foundation or by GIG, and that it's been certified, because you know that it's definitely safer. Or labels that say that it's complete gluten-free facility. That's always amazing. And, you know, give props to the companies who actually are working in a certified gluten-free facility, because that's a lot of work and a lot of time and effort that they've gone to do that, to make sure that their customers are safe. It gets sketchy when, you know, you see a label that says made in or shared with a wheat facility, because Some are safe for sure, but you're not necessary, but you don't know. You don't know, has it been shared on the same equipment? Is it on a different side of the warehouse? How is it? You know, you don't get that information. So I generally try to stick to products that either I know for sure, or that state that they're in a certified gluten-free facility. I also have, I use a really good app on my phone that's called Fooducate, Fooducate, and it's amazing. You could set it for whatever you want. You could set it for gluten, soy, eggs, nuts, and you can scan the label, and you scan the little code, and then the label comes up, and Fooducate explains all the label. It tells you if it has gluten in it, or if it has these ingredients, the percentage. It'll even give you a percentage, like, yes, there's a 90% chance that this has gluten in it, and then it also comes with reviews from people who've reviewed, you know, just regular everyday people like you and I, who've reviewed these products and say, yeah, this is a definite or no. And that's one thing I recommend to my clients for sure when they're grocery shopping, because it just makes it easier. Because I mean, I've read labels like two or three times and literally still missed the word wheat or missed, because I was, you know, because I'm in my brain, I've been doing this for so long that I just, you know, you get, not that you get cocky, but you just, oh, you scan it so quickly, and then you get it home and you're like, oh my God, what was I even thinking? Where was I? So that the app does help for sure in those cases.
Oh,
that's cool. It helps grocery shopping. So you're not in the grocery store for like 2 hours.
And what was that app called again?
It's called Fooducate, Fooducate.
Okay, great. And so I just had one more question for you. And basically what I'm wondering is, and I'm from the sound of it, you do this. Do you help with restaurants, and do you also do consultations?
I do, actually. I do gluten-free rehab, and you can set up a consultation on my page, and it's for everybody. It's if you're new to gluten-free and you are learning about the lifestyle and you have questions, I think it's really important to really understand the whole concept of gluten-free and what you're really getting yourself into and what all that entails about cross-contamination and living in a shared household. If you're sharing your household with somebody who's not gluten-free, you have to consider factors like the toaster, because just people don't realize it, but with me, just a few crumbs, that's all it takes. Sharing the same peanut butter jar and somebody who's, you know, using regular bread and sticking his knife in and out, and you're coming with yours, not realizing it, and you're putting those crumbs on your bread, you're going to get sick. So it's things like that that, you know, and how to order when you're out at a restaurant and questions to ask. And also with restaurants, I have a few clients that call to find out about, you know, their menus, to make sure their menus are there, all these ingredients are gluten-free, and cross-contamination in their kitchens. Like how do they avoid cross-contamination in their kitchens so their customers are safe and they can be trusted? So I think those are very, very important things. And I think we talk so much about gluten-free, but we don't talk about its twin, which is cross-contamination. And I think that's what causes a lot of problems and sickness, is that. And it's something that people who aren't gluten-free and people who are gluten-free know little about. And that needs to be explored much, much more, especially with the onslaught of restaurants putting gluten-free on their menu. You see those little GFs. And I can't tell you how many times I went to a restaurant out here in Woodland Hills, and their whole menu practically had little GFs next to it. And they told me that I could not have anything on the menu because they could not guarantee that anything that was coming out of the kitchen would be safe.
Wow, that is horrible to hear.
I was blown away. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I traveled all the way up here because most of your menu is gluten-free. You even have gluten-free bread that you make, and you're telling me that I can't eat it because it's not safe?
Wow, that's sad.
And that's what's, you know, it's not regulated, and it needs to be regulated because, you know, it's about safety. It's not
it
about
is.
More customers into your restaurant.
And Kirsten, that leads me to, my last question actually for you, is basically nowadays everybody's doing gluten-free. Now, do you think they're doing that to maintain, just to lose weight? Because I know a lot of friends of mine are doing gluten-free just for that. Or do you think they're doing it for their health? Which one do you find is more of a factor?
Well, I think it's maybe a little of both. I don't necessarily think that if you're doing gluten-free to lose weight, that's just a bad idea. And it's not going to work. It's just like any other fad diet that you do for a week. You know, you're going to end up going back to the regular way that you eat, because gluten-free is a lifestyle. It's not just something that you do, which is why I have such a problem with people calling it a gluten-free diet. And, you know, you even have the foundations, the celiac foundations out there have been calling it the celiac or gluten-free diet since I've been gluten-free. And it frustrates and annoys me because it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. And I think that adds the fad wagon in people's brains, because they hear diet, and so that's something that you do for a short amount of time to lose weight or to cleanse your body. It's not a lifestyle. It's not, you know, it's something that you're changing. You become your lifestyle. And so I think it's really important that people embrace the word lifestyle instead of diet, and to change the overall thinking in people's brains. And I think people do feel healthier when they eat gluten-free, but it's also because they're not eating the garbage that they were eating before. They're not eating as much cupcakes or cookies or the wheat products that are loaded with sugar because they're gluten-free now. So they've become slightly healthier through giving up that stuff. But if you don't follow it through, it's just, you're just gonna go back to being what you felt like before.
Right. And I'm glad you answered that, because I'm sure Blessing and both of you have heard many people on Facebook or social media say, I'm doing the gluten-free diet. Well, I'm glad you answered that question. So it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. And I agree with you that if you're just doing it for 2 weeks, you're just gonna go back to your normal state afterwards. For me, I'm doing no sugar for more than 3 months now. And say if I broke that no sugar diet, for me, you know, if you put just a little bit of sugar in your stomach, you're going to bloat and you'll just go back to that same state. So,
exactly.
So I'm glad that you answered that question, because I really wanted to ask you that. And I really hope that you can spread the word of a gluten-free lifestyle versus a diet.
Yeah. And my tagline is ditch the diet, live the lifestyle. And that's, you know, that's what it should be, is because it is a lifestyle. And And just like you said, I completely agree with you that, you know, once you give something up and then you go back to it, even a little bit, those symptoms or whatever, they're going to hit you fivefold. Like, you thought it was bad before, give it up and then go back to it, and your symptoms are going to be way worse than they were.
I agree. No, because I actually...
A quick question. Do you think gluten-free food is also applicable to drinks, wines, and smoothies?
Well, it depends on the ingredients. I mean, wines are generally okay, I've found. Obviously, you can't have beer. Most alcohols are okay. I recommend staying away from any well alcohol, which is just like the bottom barrel junk stuff. I stick to like vodkas. I'll stick to like Ciroc or Chopin, which are potato and grape made vodkas. I drink a lot of tequila, which has no problem with gluten whatsoever. And then you have rum, which is sugar based. Basically, alcohol is okay. And then you have bourbon and whiskey, which has gluten in it, but because of the distillation, it's been distilled all out. And I really haven't had a problem with high-end bourbons that I drink. I don't drink them very often, though. And it's amazing, once you give up gluten, sometimes other things bother you. Like wine. I had to give up wine for 2 years because I don't know if I just was hypersensitive, but I would take one sip and start sneezing immediately. No matter if it was high, really expensive wine or the cheap stuff, it didn't matter. So I had to just completely give it up. And it's only recently that I've actually started drinking it every once in a while again.
It's interesting.
But things like oats bother people. Sometimes with gluten issues, oats can bother people. So it's sometimes coffee. It's sometimes dairy. It really just depends. I'm okay. When I first went gluten-free, I did a 30-day no processed food diet, basic lifestyle. Like all I ate for 30 days was fresh vegetables, fresh fruit, meats, fish, nuts. I didn't eat anything out of a package except, you know, my random buckwheat pasta or something that I added into the meal. But I really just tried to heal my body and give it the vitamins and minerals and all the nutrients that it needed, which I think is important.
Interesting.
Right. So what do you use for your sweetening? Do you use honey in place of sugar? Or
I actually like coconut palm sugar.
That's actually really good. I actually have that here.
I use that because it does have vitamins in it. That's adding, and it doesn't spike the blood sugar like regular sugar does, or it actually stabilizes your blood sugar. So I use coconut palm sugar mostly. I use honey sometimes. I use honey mainly in tea, but in baking, I'll use the coconut palm sugar. Yeah, generally I use that.
So what do you have to say about brown sugar? Do you recommend brown sugar at all?
Well, I think it's just your personal taste for whatever you're baking. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think everyone is different. And I'm sure Christina actually could probably answer this question better than I can, since she bakes. So why don't you take that over, Christina?
Well, I mean, basically brown sugar, yeah, it is preference, but you know, lately for me, I'm not doing sugar. So of course I use honey, and Blessing, you knew that too, because we talk about that in our group. But you know, it's definitely preference, but if I use any sugar, it's going to be my own brown sugar that I use. I put molasses in it and I make my own. I do not buy brown sugar from the store, or I use organic cane sugar. So it just depends on what recipe. I mean, yesterday I made Greek cookies and I use honey, and then the next day I might make something different, like muffins, and use something completely like brown sugar, you know. So
I do have a question though. Like, let's say you're taking a regular recipe and it needs like 3/4 cup sugar. How do you transfer that into honey? Because you're not using that same amount of honey, right?
Right. So you're gonna cut it completely in half. That's what I usually do. Honey,
the sugar.
Yes, and that's a good question too, because a lot of people have been asking me that, and I will have that on my Facebook page and my website today. So if you guys want to go check it out on Kuzina's Kitchen, you can. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
How do you spell your website?
Sure. So it's Greek inspired. It's K-O-U, Z as in zebra, O-U-N-A-S, like Sam, kitchen.com.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And so, you know, honey is pretty strong in recipes depending on what kind of honey you're using. So make sure you just cut it in half. So if it calls for 3 cups of sugar, just cut it right in half for the honey. And that's another thing. I can completely go into something totally different, which I probably shouldn't, but we should do a podcast on how to replace ingredients. And for me, I don't use mayonnaise whatsoever. I don't like mayonnaise. So I use Greek yogurt in replace of that. So hopefully we can do a podcast blessing on that soon. But
I do that too. I use yogurt and I'll use yogurt in place of oil too sometimes.
That's great.
And I'll do applesauce as well in place of oil.
Right. That's awesome.
And
that's
someone mentioned a couple of days ago that she uses yogurt in place of egg.
Yes, I do that. I do that too. Yep, I'm a big fan of that.
Okay, so you use yogurt in place of eggs?
Yes. So I hope I'm right with this. I believe it's 1 egg. For 1 egg, it's 1/4 cup of Greek yogurt or any yogurt. But let me just, I think that's right, guys. But I did actually do a post on that and I should know, but this was been a year ago. So.
And just recently I made cookies and I didn't have any butter. So instead of butter, I used the applesauce,
right.
Which it was okay. But it's funny because the cookies came out cake-like instead of like crispy cookies. They came out more, they actually rose and they came out more like individual little teeny bread things. It was really interesting.
That is interesting. And it was right, you guys. So anytime you don't have eggs or you just want to do no egg substitute, so use 1/4 cup of yogurt, any yogurt per 1 egg.
Huh. I'm a fan of eggs. I know some people can't eat eggs, but I'm a huge fan of eggs, and I think I'm a huge fan of healthy fats, and that's.
I hope you don't exceed 1 per day. Ideally, you're meant to eat 1 egg per day.
Well, I try not to eat something like the same things every day because I think that can lead to allergies to that at some point.
Because most people, they eat more than 1 egg per day. Most people they eat maybe like 2-3 eggs the same time in a day. I mean, which is not healthy at all.
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I think that, you know, we have a stigma here that fat is bad. And now, you know, after years of telling the public that saturated fat is bad, now we actually have scientific studies coming out saying, I think we were wrong all those years. Of course, everything in moderation, but
right.
Eggs with yolk is amazing for you. That's where all the vitamins and the minerals are. And it's 5 grams of fat, which people look at and they're like, oh my God, but that fat, because it's the kind of fat it is literally used as energy right away. Your whole body uses fat as energy. Your brain needs it. Your body needs it. Your organs need it. Your joints need it. And in moderation, you need it to survive and to think and to function. And I think, you know, we've taken our healthy fats out of so many our foods and we went to the low fat and the fat free, which is absolutely awful for you because not only have they taken out the fats, the healthy fat, they've replaced it with sugar and high fructose corn syrup, but left the same calories. So you're eating the same. And even though it doesn't have fat in it, now it's even worse for you than it was before. And I think your brain is 60% fat and it literally needs fat to survive. And I tell people, I give them the car analogy that, you know, what would happen if you were to take all the oil out of your car and then try to drive it? Your car is going to not, you know,
it won't work.
It's going to seize up and leave you on the side of the road and there's going to be smoke pouring out of your hood. And it's the same concept with healthy fat. If you take that fat out of your diet, your body is going to seize up. It's not going to work because it doesn't have any lubrication to like the oil in your car to make it ride smoothly. And this is just my own opinion, but I personally think that's one of the reasons that we have such a huge rise in Alzheimer's disease because, you know, your the brain is hardening. Well, if you leave a sponge out, what is it going to do? It hardens. It's the same concept. If you take the fat out of your brain, there's no lubrication. It hardens and it creates those plaques. So I think adding the healthy fat into your diet is so important. And it actually helps you lose weight because, you know, when you eat an avocado,
that's what I was just going to say, avocado.
Yeah, it's safe. Not only is an avocado...
That's a natural one.
Yeah, but not only is avocado super, super healthy for you, it also curbs your hunger because the fat is satiating your brain and your body, and so it's making you not hungry, and the fiber as well, and it's giving you vitamins and minerals, and I don't know, I love avocados. Like, I think everybody should
Me
add
too.
Avocados and all that to their diet, like, and the avocado tree is an anomaly. Like, it shouldn't even, it's like the bumblebee. Like, the bumblebee shouldn't fly because of its weight ratio. The avocado tree, the what it's made up of is made up of a lot of oceanic minerals, which sets the avocado tree apart from any other fruit because it's not grown near the water. It's grown inland, and so I think you have all those added benefits as well.
That's very interesting. I mean, I always include, and it's funny to say, Blessing, I probably do have more than one egg a day, but, you know, I tend to have one egg in the morning with some toast and avocado and cherry tomatoes, and that's my breakfast. And I will say, though, my father, he eats, like, I don't know, he has, like, 3 or 4 a day, and that's just how he was raised in Greece, you know? But I don't consider eggs unhealthy. It's just, like you said, in moderation. You can't have, like, 10 eggs a day and then, you know?
Right.
But everything in moderation. And
I mean, and if you look at our grandfathers and, you know, not our parents, because now our parents are the sick ones. They're the baby boomers who are sick and have Alzheimer's. But if you look at our grandparents or our great-grandparents, I mean, who didn't have a big fat can of Crisco sitting right next to their frying pan, you know? I mean, everything was fried in fat or added to, full fat was added. And obesity was at an all-time low. It wasn't an issue. You also had people walking more and working and doing a lot more different things, but... I think that says a lot about our society. And then once you take the fat out, now obesity is at the highest rate it's ever been in, ever.
It's so sad. Yeah. When you said about the Crisco, well, my grandparents, they grew up in Greece. That's where they were from. And so they, my mom's side, they grew up in California. So they were used to what, you know, the Crisco or whatever. But in Greece, they were brought up with olive oil and the freshest ingredients. And that's where I'm proud. You know, I actually named my food blog over, dedicated to my grandmother. Her last name was Kouzounas. So it's knowing, being raised with the Mediterranean diet, that has so many benefits. And I don't know how you feel about it, Kirsten, but I think that the Mediterranean diet alone is amazing. The olive oil and tomatoes. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. It's filled with so many great foods that are healthy for you. And it's, they're not worried about fat. It's the food. And the food is giving back to you. The food is the fuel that feeds our body. And I don't think enough people equate that food, everything you put in your mouth is either inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. Inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. It's either going to help you or it's going to hurt you. It's pretty much black and white. There's really no in-between when it comes to food. And it's really interesting that it's taken so long for people to link what they eat with disease. I don't get that. Even doctors. They're like, what? Nutrition? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's very important. And like I said, it's so nice to have you on our podcast because you're telling people what they should be doing. And, you know, we need more people out there that can educate, not only about gluten-free lifestyle, but there's vegan as well. And there is so many other different lifestyles that people want to maintain. But to me, I think it's still a fad, like we were saying earlier. Gluten-free is a fad to people. We need to share this information, you know, basically for you, let people know that you can do this lifestyle. It just is, it's not easy, right? But
no, it's not easy. It takes commitment. And, you know, for me, it's easy because I know I'm going to get sick. So I just don't eat it. You know, I cook a lot of my stuff. I eat, and it's easier to eat healthy than it is to not eat healthy.
Right. I really like to thank you again for being on our podcast. Very interesting. I've learned so much from you, and I'm sure Blessing did too. And I'd like to just have our audience know again where you blog at, if you can let them know, and how they can reach you.
Sure. My website is glutenfreegal.com. My Facebook is Gluten-Free Guide to Life. On Twitter, I'm Kirsten Berman, GF.
Okay. That's great. And then Blessing, did you have anything else to say?
Well, it's great throughout this period. It's great having you on board, Christina. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Hope
yeah.
to hear from you some other time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you both.
Thank you so much for being on our podcast. And I'm sure that our audience will find this very informative.
I hope so.
Yes. Well, you girls have a great day and thanks for listening in.
All right. Thank you, Chen. Bye.
Thank you.